You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Daniel Kelman's latest novel, Fame, explores the overlap between reality and fiction in a way that will probably be familiar to readers of his earlier work. Mr. Kelman is only 35. Is that right? 35 years old?
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. And he's already written 6 novels. Jeez, I feel like such a slacker. European critics call him the Austrian Wunderkind. I mispronounced that, I'm sure. After his novel, Measuring the World, published in 2007, it won several literary prizes and spent several months on top of the European bestseller list. His latest book, the second to be translated into English, is published by Pantheon. And I'm pleased to bring him to the Leonard Lopate Show. Good to have you with us.
Great to be here.
So where do you get your ideas and when do you write?
I get all my ideas in the bathtub,
right?
Yes.
This is an inside joke for those who have not read the book. There is a character here who is a kind of a whiny writer, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You could call him quite a terrible guy, yes.
Yeah, and he's constantly asked the question about those two questions. And you can't help but read that and think that you probably have been asked that question a time or two and get tired of it.
It's one of the favorite questions people ask writers these days. Where do you get your ideas from? I was always puzzled by that because I never know what to say. And so I thought it would make for a good running gag to have people ask him this question all the time. And he always answers in the bathtub, which is a lie, but it makes people happy. He doesn't know why, but they think they got some kind of private information out of that.
So they're off they go. And,
yes, absolutely.
You know, sometimes it's better just to make something up and
yes.
On we go. It's a white lie. Who cares? Let's back up just a little bit and talk, because it doesn't begin with that particular character. This is actually 9 separate stories that are linked in clever ways. And you begin with the story of Ebling. This is a tech guy, an IT guy, we'd call him, or whatever, involved in computers, who has held off getting a cell phone and finally decides to get one. And all kinds of fun things happen as a result. Matter of fact, I think you wanted to read a little bit from...
Why don't you
read about that Ebling portion? Then we'll talk about how the story kind of takes off from there.
It's the beginning of the book, the first chapter, and it's called Voices. Even before Ebling reached home, his cell phone rang. For years he had refused to buy one because he was a technician and didn't trust the thing. Why did nobody wonder about whether it was a good idea to clutch a powerful source of radiation to your head? But Ebling had a wife, 2 children, and a handful of acquaintances, and one of them was always complaining that he was unreachable. So finally he'd given in and bought a phone, which he asked the guy he bought it from to activate immediately. In spite of himself, he was impressed. It was absolutely perfect, beautifully designed, smooth lines, elegant. And now, without warning, it was ringing. Very hesitantly, he picked up. A woman asked for someone called Ralph. He couldn't figure out the name. A mistake, he said. Wrong number. She apologized and hung up. That evening, the next call. Ralph! The man's voice was loud and hoarse. What gives? What are you up to, you old bastard? Wrong number. Ebling sat up in bed. It was already past 10 o'clock, and his wife was looking at him reproachfully.
So what happened? It turns out Ralph is a famous guy, right?
Yes, he's a famous movie star. And for some reason, and also this reason will be explored later in the book, that number was assigned twice. 2 people got the same phone number. So now Ebling is getting all these calls for the famous actor. And at the beginning, he calls tech support or phone support, and he tries to stop this, which doesn't work. But then he realizes that this could actually be interesting because it adds a whole dimension to his life. And he starts to interfere with the life of this famous actor.
Yeah, I mean, Ralph has a better life than Ebling, in essence. It certainly seems more exciting.
He has a much better life. He has the life of a famous movie star. And and Ebling tries to share this life by pretending to be the movie star to the people calling. And then later in the book, because that's the principle, this links between the stories, all kind of... characters and also events moving through from one story to the next. So later in the book, there is a story about that very movie star who's in whose life very weird things start to happen. And also his phone doesn't ring anymore. So, and he never finds out what's happening to him. But of course, the reader will have an idea.
So the his career starts to go down as a result
yes,
of this.
Yes, massively, yes.
And Ebling inadvertently is the instrument of that
yes.
by just picking up the phone
yes.
and kind of playing along.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so that's just one way that this is all connected. When you sat down to write this thing, the way this is connected, it's almost like a jigsaw puzzle.
And it is, it is.
Did you have that all figured out, or were you just doing it as you went along?
I had some of it figured out. But a lot of it also came to me while I was writing it. And of course, a lot of the fun of the book for the reader will come from discovering all these connections and finding out about these all these threads between the episodes. And so, for example, it's not just about this number being assigned twice. Later in the book, there's a story about a cell phone company executive who is leading a double life between two women and who lets his guard down as far as his job goes. And so some weird things happen in the computer system. And so numbers get assigned twice. And one of his the people working for him goes off to a congress, and there he goes to pester a famous and to follow and to stalk a famous writer whose fan he is, and this writer is the main character of two of the other episodes. So it while you move through the book reading, it all comes closer and closer together. And a lot of it I actually discovered only while I was writing it, and I had a lot of fun with that.
So you must, yeah, it sounds like it was a lot of fun discovering it as you went along the whole process. You know, it reads like something that would be easily transferred onto the big screen. Is this something you'd like to see as a movie sometime?
Actually, it's happening right now. They're of course, you never know in the movies whether shooting will really happen, but it looks like they will start shooting the end of the year. So, yeah, I keep my fingers crossed, of course.
This subject of fame, you, at a young age, congratulations to you, relatively young, have achieved quite a bit of fame for your work. Were the pitfalls that were surrounding all of this on your mind as you wrote? Is that why you just wanted to write about this? Or would you have written this book? Could you have written this as your first book, in other words?
Maybe not. I think one of the good things about being a writer is whatever happens to you, even when bad things happen to you or disturbing things or confusing things, there is always a way to use them, to put them to good use in your work. And that's one thing. And the other thing is also a good way to make things productive, to turn things into something you can use, is to make fun of them. And so if something very troubling happens to you, like being suddenly the author of a bestseller and getting all these letters and having to deal with this kind of I would still say this modest kind of celebrity that a writer can achieve, which is still not comparable to the celebrity status of a famous actor, for example. But still, it can be troubling.
But the groupies can be very fervent for a writer, right?
Well, I won't deny this, but also in this respect, no comparison to the groupies of famous actors.
Okay.
But I'm not complaining about that.
All right, well, go ahead. Press on.
Yes. No, and so a good thing to use this is to make fun of it and to make fun of the weirdness of fame as a phenomenon, and also to explore I would say, the philosophical puzzles involved in what is fame and how weird is it to be known by people you do not know, and to have all these people carrying a certain concept, a certain idea of what a famous person is like, and the famous person, of course, thinking I'm completely different than they believe I am. But the interesting thing that was bothering me is we all, not just famous people, all of us, we think we are so different from what people perceive us to be and how people perceive us to be. But maybe we are wrong and the people are right.
Oh, boy. Now we're getting pretty deep here. We're speaking with the rather famous Daniel Kelman, whose latest novel is called Fame, a novel in 9 episodes. Do you like Fame? I mean, the way you talk about it, if there's a theme in all this, is that it's very fleeting. It's ethereal.
It is ethereal and it is fleeting. And I think it is, of course, it is fun to be famous in the modest way a writer can be famous. I think the real celebrity status of movie stars for a person who is not completely narcissistic, it would be hell. I grew up among actors because my father was a director, and I had this experience of walking on the street with people, and everybody who was moving on the street was recognizing these people and knew who these people are. And it really frightened me. Even as a child, I thought, this is no way to live. This is a nightmare. And I still think that. But the kind of fame that you can achieve as a writer, which means you give your name sometimes and then people ask you, oh, are you the writer? And people sometimes telling you that they like your books. This is still very nice. So this, I won't complain about this.
No complaints. Okay, so no. You're not like the whiny guy in this book.
I try not to be.
Yeah. You grew up in a theater family, right?
Yes, I did.
So your father, a director?
Yes.
And so that's interesting. That's a different kind of fame, being on the stage. Did you have – because actually when you read this, it's almost like you can see it unfolding as acts in a play.
Yeah.
I don't know if you thought about that or
– I did. Yeah. I did. I thought – well, no, I didn't think of it that much as a play, but I did think of it as an episode movie. You know, these movies consisting of different
L.A.
episodes.
Stories,
yes,
or
exactly.
Grand Canyon, those kinds of
things. Or yeah. Babel or
right.
Magnolia.
Right.
So my first idea actually was because I liked this episode movie so much. And I thought, how can I turn this principle, this structure into a novel, but not just by copying it, but by doing something that in this way only a novel can do and a movie cannot. And I thought of the book as a novel masking as a short story collection. So you can read it as if it were a short story collection, but if you've reached the middle, that's at least what I hoped for, you will more and more have the feeling this is actually not a short story collection. This is a real novel.
It's very funny, and humor often doesn't translate. You write in German, obviously, your native language. It's translated, and it still works. Are you writing with thoughts, because you spend a lot of time here in America, with the American ear for humor in mind, or are you writing for your in German language for a German audience, and then you fix the humor later with help with your translator?
The humor I have in mind is entirely mine. So I don't think about certain audiences or the question
which
side
of
the Atlantic.
Right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
That's the only thing you can do. If you try to do your personal market research while being funny, you will end up being just very boring, I think. But of course, the question of translation is a very important and also real one to me. And I'm very lucky to have an English translator I'm working very close with Carol Janeway. And the way how she translates the humor, and humor is very important in all my books, is that she actually shares my sense of humor. And so I have complete trust in her sense of humor on the other side. So I even tell her, if you see a way here to get a joke better, not just better than it would than a literal translation would be, but maybe also if you get it better than it's in German, or if you see a way to make something funny that in the German version actually is not funny, then go for it.
Yeah.
And so in some ways the humor works even better because she's so brilliant, and then we are of course working on it together, so I check and recheck it all and we have discussions about it. But in some cases, the humor works better in the English translation than in the German original. I shouldn't say that, but and some people will suspect that I only say that to market the American edition. But it is actually true, I promise.
Tell me, before you get away here, what are you working on now?
Yeah, I wish I knew. I got started on a new novel, but the emphasis here really lies on the word "got started." So it's all very new, and I still don't really know where it's going. So I can only hope that it will work out to be a book someday. But I'm rather confident that sooner or later it will become a novel, but it might take a bit of time.
Adventures in writing, I guess, huh? It's, you don't know where it's headed, do you?
You never do. Writing is a great adventure. It's one of the least boring jobs I can imagine.
We've been speaking with Daniel Kelman. His latest novel is Fame, a novel in 9 episodes. It is published by Pantheon. And the translation is by Carol Janeway, who he talked quite a bit about. Obviously, they have a good partnership there. Daniel Kelman will be reading and signing books at McNally Jackson next Tuesday at 7 p.m. For more information about this event and others, you can head to our show page at WNYC.org. Daniel, thanks. Enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you very much.